to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here welcoming you on board to the show this week. And hey, it's just me again. Kevin's away again this week as he has been for quite a number of weeks throughout the season thus far. But he's been off doing important things. He's been busy getting ready for the wedding, which is over, and the honeymoon, which is over. Now they're moving into the new house, so there's been plenty going on in Kevin's life, and he'll be back soon enough, and can't wait till he's back, because it means I'll have to do 50% less talking, which is probably good for all of us here, but hey. We're going to push on regardless because we're talking about Formula One. It's our favorite sport and there's a ton of news to talk about this week. We have a British Grand Prix at Silverstone coming up this weekend. It's one of my favorites. I know I say that every week, but I love Formula One. What can I say? Anyways, before we get into the show this week, there are a couple of shout-outs I want to give. And I usually don't do these right off at the top, but hey, let's be a little bit different this week. First of all, we got a review that came in via Apple Podcasts, and that's from Maybe Not in the USA. And the review was a five-star review, which is absolutely wonderful. And the comment was, second only to BBC's F1 podcast. Not bad for a couple of Canadians. There are several other F1 shows, of course, but the forced laughs make them a painful listen. Stick to these two. That's absolutely awesome. Love it. It's great to get the reviews on Apple Podcasts because we don't ask for money around here. We don't need it. We get all our costs covered by our sponsors, which is great. We're not in it for the money. We're here because we love F1. And if you want to show us a little love, want to show us a little bit of support, the best and easiest and the quickest way, just go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to the show. Just leave a rating review there. It really does help, and it helps make the show more visible, and it helps grow the audience, which is basically all we want to do. We want to share our love with Formula One with all you guys out there, and that's the best way to do it. All right, moving along, we've got another email to get to, and that is from David Thompson, and David's email is as follows. It is my favorite out of all the F1 podcasts I listen to. I'm hoping this is the right podcast to ask. I was wondering if you could talk about what you know about the steering wheel and display, such as, can a driver see if the lap is faster or slower than the last one? Can the driver see the status of the gap between the car in front or in back? And what other useful info can the driver learn other than what gear it's in or the speed of the car? Or does the driver need to ask his engineer by radio? Then are some transmissions private and others public? Okay, so there is a lot to unpack in this email. And first of all, David, thanks for sending that in, of course. And the Formula One steering wheel is obviously as complicated as you would expect it to be because it's Formula One. There's nothing simple or straightforward about it. But there are a number, quite a lot of different things going on there. Obviously, on the reverse, the back side of the steering wheel, you have the paddles that you have for the up and the downshift on the car, which you see in a lot of road cars nowadays. I have them in my own car, and it's really kind of cool to be able to have the control of the car. Obviously, that's a major system in the Formula One car. You have the pit limiter. You have a button for neutral, which if you hold it down long enough, will put the car into reverse. There are a number of different switches where you can adjust the differential on the entry, and also in the middle of a corner gives them the control over the amount of understeer or oversteer, brake balance, all sorts of different things. There's the start mode, the engine modes. It's literally limitless. I really don't know how these guys can go around at over 200 miles an hour, making on average somewhere between 50 and 70 gear shifts, both up and down shifts over the course of the lap, monitor what's going on in the car in front of them, monitoring what the car is doing, and make all these switches make all the changes on the switches and dials. It's absolutely amazing. I mean, these guys are not only fantastic racers, but they are managing the car, and it really is very, very impressive. Because if you go around, and what I did in my research was that the way that a lot of these cars are designed is that by being able to to give them the control, like with the differentials and the brake balance and the engine modes and things like that, is basically taking a very complicated piece of machinery that is a Formula One car and essentially giving them the control and giving it a feel that they basically, a lot of the engineers say, is similar to a go-kart, which a lot of these drivers are used to from, well, when they started racing when they're kids, which is pretty cool. Now, as for the display, you know, in my research, there's not a lot that really came up out of that. So leads me to think that a lot of the information is out there is proprietary and confidential, and they don't really want it to go out there. Actually, there are quite a lot of really cool videos that are out there. Mercedes have put out quite a few, and there is one that was put out just a couple of months ago at the beginning of the season, and it was Valtteri Bottas just explaining everything on the steering wheel and what you can do about it. I mean, the steering wheels are even formed to their shape to their own hands, which of course is a detail that you would expect to see in Formula One. And but the point is that there were a couple of items that were bleeped out and censored because obviously it was a little bit too sensitive for you know, that to go out into the public domain. But they do, of course, have a button that they can talk to the pits and get feedback from the engineer. Because some of the things I did see is, of course, you do see the gear that you're in, and also you have the speed on there. You do have a series of LEDs across the top of the steering wheels on some of these cars, and when they hit red is when you're supposed to shift gears. And there will be a display on there that show the status of a number of different systems in the car, so the drivers can get feedback on what they're doing. But certainly there is some back and forth between themselves in the pits and the engineers. Although, what with the new radio rules that came in a couple of years ago, they are limited into what they can say and really coach them. Because when was it? Was it last year, the year before? I know Lewis Hamilton was having some problems with the engine mode in his car. And I remember them talking about it during the race, that there were literally thousands of different positions and combinations of the settings that he had available or to choose in the car. And they just weren't able to coach him from back in the pits as to, I'll turn this knob to this position and that one to that one and do this and that. You know, he basically had to kind of figure it out on his own, which, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, being a driver, he knows what a lot of these things do, but some of the finer things, you know, he kind of would need a little bit of coaching through, but I think it worked out semi-okay for him. But as far as actually getting timing information, wasn't able to dig up anything on that. Of course, as you see nowadays, it hasn't changed from the old days when they go past the pits. You still have somebody leaning over the pit wall with a board showing their position, plus the gap to the car and in front of him and behind him. So anyways, that's what I could find in the brief amount of time I had to look into it. So if you guys know any more, send it in. I'd love to share it and put it out here on the show. Anyways, like I said, we do have a British Grand Prix to look forward to this weekend, and that's where we're going to start off this weekend with good news that Silverstone has extended their British Grand Prix contract until 2024, and it's been a little bit up in the air. Well, yeah, let's be honest. It was up in the air, and I was kind of concerned that it might not get done because they did break their contract with Formula One, because they did sign a very long multi-year contract right at the end of the Bernie Ecclestone era. And of course, being the way that Bernie did business, there was a series of escalating fees each and every year just to host the event, and it was getting to the point that it was just becoming financially difficult for them to make money off of it. And just to host the race, even though the British Grand Prix is typically very well supported, very well attended, and it would have been a shame that if they weren't able to keep it going. Anyways, they did have an out clause, and they did exercise that in the recent past, and they have spent quite a significant amount of time renegotiating this deal with Liberty Media, the current operators and owners of Formula One. And I'm really glad to see it. And I mean, it was Well, they did trigger the break clause, and that was back in 2019, and that was the contract they signed with Bernie Ecclestone way back in 2009. So it meant they opted out of the remaining 5 or 6 seasons, and that deal was set to end in 2026. So this new deal is not going quite as far, but it is really good news. And I've said over the past couple of years repeatedly that although I'm perfectly fine with Formula One exploring new venues and new cities and new racetracks and new countries to go to, there are those core races, those historic tracks in Formula One that for me, it's got to be included each and every year. I mean, I can say it ad nauseum that to me, Formula One wouldn't be the same without the Italian Grand Prix, without the British Grand Prix, without the Belgian Grand Prix. And even though I'm not the biggest fan of Monaco, just the track, it's too small, it's too slow, it's too compact. There's rarely ever any passing. It is part of Formula One. It is part of the history. And as much as it's not my favorite track, I still like to enjoy the spectacle. And I just take it with a pinch of salt. I just know that it's not going to be typically the most exciting race of the year, but it has had its moments now and again, and it just would be inconceivable that Formula One would be without it. And the same with Silverstone, that if it was to go, it would just seem incredible to me that that there wouldn't be a British Grand Prix, considering it is basically the Silicon Valley of Formula One. So many of the Formula One teams are based near Silverstone. I mean, they all test there, and it's been a staple of Formula One for since time immemorial. I know that there were times that way back when I think they sort of fluctuated or alternated between there and Brands Hatch, if I remember correctly, but I'm really pushing my memory. But it's good to see. It is really good to see. And Chase Carey, the CEO of Formula One, said, "We are really pleased to confirm that the British Grand Prix will stay on the calendar for at least the next 5 years, with the event remaining at its longstanding home, Silverstone Circuit. We've always said that if it is to have a long-term future, our sport must preserve its historic venues, and Silverstone in Great Britain represent the cradle of the sport, its starting point back in 1950. Today, Formula One is a global sport held on 5 continents, watched by an audience of over 500 million fans around the world, and our aim is to grow this number by bringing the sport we love to new countries while also maintaining its roots. Silverstone and the British Grand Prix are an integral part of that vision." So that's great to hear, and certainly it's the timing is absolutely perfect. What with the British Grand Prix coming up just in a couple of days, obviously by the time that this podcast goes out to download, that we'll be into free practice, and qualifying is just around the corner on Saturday. So an exciting weekend of racing coming up. But even though Formula One has renewed the deal with Silverstone, the British Grand Prix, for another 5 years, it is also out that they are still looking to add a London race alongside Silverstone. And I think that's really kind of cool. I've thought about it quite a bit, and this is no news. I mean, this has been going back, I think, even to last Christmas, or certainly in the new year, when this first came out. And I think it'd be kind of cool to see that, you know, to have two races. I mean, geographically, they're not too far apart, but a lot of the European races are certainly like that. I mean, it'd be a lot different than, say, adding a second American race. I mean, we have the U.S. Grand Prix at the Circuit of the Americas down in Austin, Texas. There's been talk about adding one in Miami. We'll talk about that in a moment. New York's been thrown out there. Vegas has been thrown out there. Hey, I wouldn't mind a Grand Prix in Vegas. I mean, we always need another excuse to go to Vegas, right, guys? So, I mean, Formula One in Vegas seems like a good match to me, but, you know, just joking aside here, I think it is interesting, and Chase Carey did say that they have a lot of interest in places, and the discussion that they're having with London and the interested parties there are ongoing, and it's going to be, what he says, a different experience, and he's open to see where they're going to take it, and their short-term focus is to make sure, and this is before the announcement came out that they were renewing with Silverstone. He said that in the short term, their goal and their aim was to continue with Silverstone. So that's out of the way. But they recognize that Formula One has this desire to have destination city races, and he thinks that that it brings new audiences to Formula One. And certainly, London is a massive city. It's a global center. I mean, it's a very diverse city, and it would be I think a possibility really worth exploring. And I think there's a lot to it, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not they can get a deal done. And if they can get a deal done, which part of London are they going to do it? Are we going to see it racing around the streets of Westminster near the Houses of Parliament and Big Ben? Probably not, but it'd be kind of cool. Or is it going to be somewhere else in the city of, well, maybe not the city of London, because that's the financial heart downtown, but is it going to be somewhere else in the greater London area? It remains to be seen, but certainly I think the possibility and the idea of a second British race in London is tantalizing and very exciting, so we'll wait and see where it goes. Anyways, time for our first commercial break here. We're going to just step aside for a quick message from our sponsor, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. As always, up to speed here on the Overtime Media Network. Excuse me, I guess I didn't get enough enough to drink in the pause there. Anyways, talking about possible races, we were just discussing the renewal of the British Grand Prix at Silverstone and the possibility of a second British race in London or in that general area. But Formula One is still determined to lock down Miami, Florida as a Grand Prix venue, and they're still confident it will happen in what they say the near future, despite the complications in finalizing a location for the race. And I don't know what it is with Miami. I've been doing this show now since 2016, and going back, I've been covering Major League Soccer, specifically the Vancouver Whitecaps, since 2013. And ever since I started that show way back when, up until just recently, there was always talk about putting a Major League Soccer club in Miami. And it literally took years. And David Beckham, the one and only Bex, as the head and the face of that group wanting to bring a Major League Soccer club to Miami, they had nothing but setback after setback after setback, looked at so many different venues in so many different parts of the city and ran into complications and roadblocks and bureaucracy and red tape. So I've watched that go through the whole, whatever you want to call it, the whole process, and the number of years that it took Beckham and his group to finally get land secured and a location secured for a stadium to get that started, get that built before they could even land a franchise or at least have the land and everything lined up in place even before they needed to break ground, before they were granted a franchise. So I'm not really surprised that there has been this I don't know what you want to call it, bureaucracy or red tape or these other hurdles that that Formula One is having in getting the Miami sorted out, getting it confirmed as a venue. And I think maybe
it will happen. I mean, the fact that it's still out there, that they're still talking about it, to me suggests that there's something still worthwhile for Formula One to do, and they certainly think that it's been done. So they originally came to a 10-year agreement to host a street race around the Biscayne Bay and Bayfront Park area, and that was supposed to start this year. It was supposed to be on the calendar for 2019, and it was met with opposition from local residents and businesses, so the race has been delayed indefinitely. So that location has been thrown to the side. So they're looking at a new one around the original location of the Miami Dolphins Hard Rock Stadium. Now, there's a consortium that's led by Dolphins owner Stephen Ross feels that a new plan that they have would create less disruption for the local area and businesses and residences, because you got to take people into consideration. I mean, for me, it's going to be no big deal watching, because, I mean, let's face it, where I'm in the Pacific Northwest is about as far away in North America as I can get from Miami, unless, say, I lived in Alaska, which actually is the crow flies is a lot closer to me than Miami and Florida is. But it has to be done responsibly. It's one thing to throw a race in there, but it's got to be, it's got to work for everyone. It can't just work for Formula One and for race fans, because they're only going to be in there for a week or a couple of days at a time, right? But the residents, they're going to have to put up with a lot more disruption for a longer point of, or a longer period of time. And certainly it has to work out. But Chloe Target Adams, who is the Formula One Global Director of Promoters and Business Relations, said that she is confident that a location can be found, even if it means waiting for a significant, or maybe not significant amount of time, but it might take a while to finally get the Grand Prix up and running. And she says that they're taking a long-term view on it, and Miami is definitely a city they want to be in. She says it's an electric, awesome destination. It's a hugely vibrant, dynamic, and great city to add to the Formula One calendar. So, again, I think it would be cool to see a second race in the same country, much like say Silverstone, the British Grand Prix, and a London Grand Prix. I think obviously America is a huge country. It's a huge population. Americans and North Americans in general love cars and racing. And obviously the country is big enough to make two races work. And Miami being obviously a very well-known and popular tourist destination would be one that would certainly be a good add to Formula One. So again, we're just going to have to wait and see whether or not it gets added to the circuit, much like London. But again, where there's smoke, there's fire. So perhaps there's some more on that to come. Right. Well, let's talk a little bit now about the British Grand Prix that's coming this weekend. Before we do that, let's just have a real quick reminder just on some of the championships here and the drivers and constructors. No need to break it all down, because there's only really a couple of people that are really figuring into it. Let's just look at the drivers' championship now briefly. It's Lewis Hamilton on top, 197 points. Valtteri Bottas second, 166 points. Max Verstappen third, 126 points. 3 points ahead of Sebastian Vettel with 123. And Charles Leclerc, the second Ferrari driver, rounding out the top five with 105 points. So obviously it looks like two-horse race at the moment. Even though Valtteri Bottas is about 30 points behind his teammates, still a lot of racing left to come. So if a couple of results go his way and a couple of results don't go Lewis Hamilton's way, that gap could even out and close significantly. So we'll wait and see if whether or not Valtteri can make a legit run at the World Championship as we go into the summer break and into the second half of the season next month. And now on the constructor side, it's going to be a Mercedes Constructors World Championship again, unless something drastic and completely unexpected, unrealistic happens, because they are just running away with it with 363 points. Ferrari second in the Constructors with 228 points. And then the third team in the top three, obviously, is Red Bull Racing. They have 169 points. And basically all of those have come from Max Verstappen. His teammate Pierre Gasly really has not contributed as much as you would expect or to see from another Red Bull driver. So Max has been pulling, I guess you could say, the lion's share, no pun intended. But certainly those are all coming mostly from him. And then, of course, as we were talking about last week, McLaren
is in fourth in the Constructors' Championship with 52 points. So good to see them up where they are. Anyway, so let's just take a quick look now at some of the stats around Silverstone. It's a 52-lap race with a circuit length of 5.89 kilometers, a race distance of just over 306 kilometers. The lap record was set by Lewis Hamilton back in 2017, and that was a 1 minute 30.621 kilometers, or sorry, a 1 minute 30.621. There's no such thing as kilometers when it comes to time. It's just minutes and seconds, isn't it? Anyways, the tires that Pirelli are bringing to the Grand Prix this weekend are the hard C1s, the medium C2s, and the soft C3s. So it is, well, do we really think that anybody other than Mercedes is going to win this one? It seems unlikely, but I guess nobody really expected to see Max Verstappen win the Austrian Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago. It certainly looked as though it was going to be another Mercedes weekend, but it didn't turn out that way once they actually hit the ground in Spielberg. And once we got to race day itself, it was anything but Mercedes. And it all came down to a cooling issue. I mean, it was very hot. It was about 35 degrees. Track temperature, obviously, a lot more than that. I really don't think we're going to see 35 degrees at Silverstone this weekend, but who knows? To me, it seems almost a foregone conclusion that Mercedes is not going to win this one. I should say that is a foregone conclusion that they will. We have seen at times this year that they haven't been as strong. I mean, Bahrain was one that Ferrari definitely let slip through their fingers. But at all the other tracks, they've looked pretty unbeatable. I mean, that's the only way to really look at it. I mean, the only time that they had any other issues was at Monaco, and that was more down to a poor choice of tires for Lewis Hamilton, or it's not really by him, but by the team, and he really fought hard to stay out front and really did a wonderful job to win that race and keep Max Verstappen at bay for so long. So until we see more teams or a Red Bull or Ferrari or somebody challenging Mercedes week in, week out, it's really hard to bet against them, isn't it? I mean, it really is looking like another Mercedes runaway season. But again, Formula One can be unpredictable. And last year was, I thought, like a really enjoyable race, especially late in the race when we had some safety car periods, and that really sort of closed up the running order and really made for an exciting finish. So it typically tends to be a good race. Obviously, it's going to be a very pro Lewis Hamilton crowd. Lewis loves to go body surfing there when he wins the race. Last year, he didn't win. But still, I quite enjoyed it. I'm hoping for similar action on the track this year. So we shall see how it turns out. Anyways, they have announced that this week that they're going to drop the controversial DRS zone. So that included the first two sweeps of the Silverstone track, and that has been dropped. So it'll just be two areas where they can activate the DRS after the addition of a third zone last year, and that was from the exit of the final corner until the braking into turn three. It was a sort of a push to use the DRS in several of the circuit's layouts in order to boost the overtaking, but enough of the cars didn't have enough downforce to be able to go through the fast Abbey right-hander with DRS open, and that led to both Romain Grosjean and Marcus Ericsson crashing at the corner after they failed to disengage the DRS in the time. So and Lewis Hamilton was he was quite blunt about it. He described that additional DRS zone as the kind of a pointless exercise and just kind of dangerous. So that kind of is not really a glowing endorsement of it. And then on the flip side, as I was saying, I'm not really expecting anyone other than Mercedes to win, especially when you have Ferrari coming out saying that they don't believe that Silverstone is going to suit its car. So again, we see that the struggles for Ferrari continue, at least on paper, at least theoretically, at least what they're saying before the Grand Prix itself. Of course, it could be completely different once we get into get to the track itself and we start racing, but team principal Mattia Binotto is quite
forthcoming and is just being pretty upfront and straightforward. And he flat out says, and I quote, "We do not expect Silverstone to suit our car particularly well, but at every race we have seen that the balance of power can change, often unexpectedly. We are bringing a further small aerodynamic modification as we continue to push hard on the development of our car. The weekend will also be an opportunity to increase our understanding of the recent work we did, which has seen us close the gap to our competitors on specific types of tracks." So, you know, they're 135 points behind Mercedes and the constructors. And, well, Vettel, who is Ferrari's best-placed driver in the World Championship, is 74 points behind Lewis Hamilton. So it doesn't really seem... well, let's just be honest about it. It's going to take a miracle for them to turn the season around now, and I don't want to write it off for them. Obviously, they can still win races this year, and at times they have looked pretty pacey, but they have often been their own worst enemy. And Mercedes team principal Toto Wolff, he came out and said earlier this week that he feels that Ferrari lost their momentum for the championship this year, back as far as Bahrain, when Charles Leclerc suffered the mechanical issue late in the race. And obviously he did finish third, and that podium was pretty much saved by a late race safety car after the two Renault cars both inexplicably and embarrassingly basically retired from the race at the exact same moment. And Sebastian Vettel had a little wobble there when fighting with Lewis Hamilton, but that was the race that really got away from them, because the race before in Australia, I think that everybody was extremely surprised how Valtteri Bottas came out and flew away from everyone. I mean, he was even arm's length ahead of Lewis Hamilton. Nobody was really able to stick with him and challenge him in that race. And that was the first shot across the bow for Ferrari, because that was the first time we saw another car. Well, we saw a Red Bull just pass them under, well, obviously there was a DRS, but pass the Ferrari of Sebastian Vettel on the straight there. That was Max Verstappen, who ended up coming in P3. And Vettel wasn't very pacey in that race at all. And then we had the team orders with Charles Leclerc having to hold station behind Vettel for P3. And it's difficult, especially when you lose momentum like that, especially, well, in any sport, really, but in that early in the season, I think for Ferrari was very, very difficult. And Toto Wolff said that he believes that the momentum Ferrari had after Bahrain was lost, because they did have the quickest car. They should have run the race. And then again, even in Baku, Wolff went on to say that Charles Leclerc was the quickest guy, and then he had that accident in Q2 going through that very narrow chicane. And it really has been a question of momentum for Ferrari. Like, they do have a completely different philosophy when it came to designing this year's car compared to Mercedes. And the biggest problem that they've had is with the downforce and not being able to get enough temperature into the tires to get them really operating in that sweet zone, in that sweet spot. And they really have struggled all year. And because of that, they really haven't been able to establish any momentum. And even though their championship challenge did fade out last year, especially after the summer break, I'm thinking Monza, Singapore, races like that, because with the Belgian Grand Prix, Vettel was he looked great. I mean, he was strong, he was quicker than Lewis Hamilton, and was able to handily beat him by a couple of seconds to take that win. But after that's when it went south for them. But before that, it really was a toss-up. Like, basically any race that they went to last year, it was either going to be Ferrari or Mercedes. And then, of course, Red Bull did manage to sneak in some races here or there. I mean, China was a very good win for them last year, but that came down more to the fact that they were just reacted very well under the safety car after that Max Verstappen and Sebastian Vettel came together in that hairpin. But anyways... this year, Ferrari has regressed. The promise that they had with the SF91 in winter testing just did not translate to the actual racing itself, and that is a shame. And it is
It is disappointing. Let's be honest that nobody has really been able to challenge Mercedes on a more consistent basis, and it is a bit of a shame that Bottas and Hamilton haven't really had too many close scraps together. But of course, they don't want to go back to the Hamilton Rosberg era, and who knows? It is disappointing, like I say, that Ferrari hasn't been able to mount a stronger challenge. But at some point this year, they're just gonna shelve it, right? They're gonna get to the point that it's not gonna be worthwhile trying to put any more time and development into the car that they have, because the championship for them is now basically lost. They're too far behind, both in the constructors and the drivers, and they're going to start focusing on next year. So that will be the big question, is not when or if, but when are they going to switch focus from this year's car into next year's car and just basically cut their losses and just finish out the year with what they have and then reap what rewards that they can, or just try and struggle through from here on out. Anyways, I've gone out a little bit long here in this second segment, so I'm just going to take another break here. And after we come back, we're going to discuss the topic that Verstappen is now possibly a better driver than Lewis Hamilton, according to Christian Horner. So anyways, don't go away. We'll be back after this very short break.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. And as I hinted before the race, before the break, that Christian Horner, the team principal at Red Bull Racing, says that he believes Max Verstappen is now a better driver than Lewis Hamilton. And that is quite the statement to make. Obviously, Lewis Hamilton, a very successful driver in Formula 1, five-time world champion since he first entered way back in 2007. And since that time, he has amassed 79 wins, 142 podiums, 86 pole positions, 42 fastest laps, 3,215 career points, 5 world championships, and his record speaks for itself, doesn't it? Max Verstappen, on the other hand, is now in his 5th season in Formula 1. His first race was way back in 2015 at the Australian Grand Prix, and in that time, he has started 90 Grand Prix. He has 6 wins, 25 podiums, 5 fastest laps, and has amassed an impressive 796 world championship points in that time. And of course, you can't compare Max and Lewis Hamilton head to head. Max is only 21, Lewis is 34, so obviously he's been in the sport for a very, very long amount of time. But I mean, the thing is, Lewis, great driver. Around the course of a lap, there is nobody quicker. And the thing is, though, what Max Verstappen did last weekend in Austria was impressive. And we have seen over the 4.5 years that Max has been in Formula One that this guy has a lot of the attributes, ticks a lot of the boxes, if you will, for what you're looking for in a top Formula One driver. And certainly to me, he looks like he has all the attributes to become a Formula One world championship. Obviously, he hasn't had the car quite over the past several seasons, but I mean, he's gone from a Toro Rosso into a Red Bull. He wins his very first race for Red Bull at the 2016 Spanish Grand Prix, and he's never really looked back. And the thing is, Max is an exciting driver to watch. He's aggressive. He's fast. He's extremely good in the wet. And all the great drivers that that we talk about. Ayrton Senna was great in the rain. Michael Schumacher was great in the rain. And Max Verstappen, just the same. I mean, go back to what was it, the Brazilian Grand Prix a couple of years ago when it was wet. Max just passing people left, right, and center in places that you would never expect to see a car pass in dry conditions, let alone when it's wet, when there's no grip, but somehow Max is able to find these things. So he certainly does have all these attributes, like I say, to become a world champion. And the other week in Austria, it was impressive to see what Max did. He had the best car on the day, and he made the use of it. I mean, it's one thing to be a good driver. It's one thing to have a good car, and it's one thing to be or have the best car, even not over the course of an entire season, but even on any given Sunday, have that that car that's better than anyone else's, or just working better than anyone else's. And it was fun to watch. I mean, honestly, I was really cheering for Charles Leclerc to win that that race. I still feel a little bit bad for Charles that it didn't work out for him a couple of races or several races ago now in Bahrain, when he was so cruelly robbed of that race because of a mechanical issue. Certainly, he looked good in Baku and qualifying. He looked good in the race, even though he had to start back in the running order because of that accident that he had. And it's going to come. Charles Leclerc, just like Max Verstappen, is going to be in Formula One for a long time. Just like Max, he's got all the attributes of a top driver, and I have a feeling that once he gets that first win, it's going to be the first of many. But just going back to Max Verstappen, Christian Horner, like I say, he says that that he feels that he is better than Lewis Hamilton just based on his current form. And as Horner goes on to say, as the driver in the form of his life, arguably over the past 12 months, he's been the best driver in the world. How do I substantiate that? He's not in the best car, but when you look at the results he's got out of that car since Montreal last year, some of the performances he's put in, he's made virtually zero mistakes in that period. It's only natural that there will always be the next generation coming. Lewis has got the benefit of his experience. He's still extremely quick. He's in the best car and a very well-oiled machine. Max is very much the coming man. Wouldn't it be fantastic for the sport to see those guys go head-to-head? And absolutely. And I think that's, for me, one of the disappointments over the past couple of years. And that's a little bit combined to the fact that Mercedes has been better than everyone else, and Ferrari has been at times as good as Mercedes or not quite close enough. But I've wanted to see more head-to-head battles between Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton. I mean, come on, they got 9 world championships between the two of them. And there's, I don't think anyone out there that that would not like to see these guys go head-to-head. I mean, this year we saw it in Montreal. I mean, Sebastian looked very, very good in that race. And they were the only two cars that that were going to go for it. Unfortunately, that race was spoiled, depending on your point of view, of course, by the 5-second time penalty that was given to Sebastian Vettel for that unsafe re-entry onto the track after he had a little wobble at the chicane at, what is that, turn 3 or turn 4 at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. But hey, if it's not going to be Sebastian Vettel, then hopefully it's Max Verstappen. And hopefully it's more than those guys. It would be more fun, I think, to see more of these top drivers go head-to-head. But certainly, the point that that Christian Horner makes is that since Montreal last year, since Montreal 2018, Max has been in very, very good form. And before that, he did struggle in that season. He had problems at the Australian Grand Prix. He in Monaco. I mean, there was a number of them in those opening 5 or 6 races. In Monaco, it kind of really came to a culmination. It all kind of snowballed to that point, to where he crashed in FP3. The car wasn't able to be fixed in time. He wasn't able to qualify, and it was just unfortunate for Max. But the thing was, he went away. He got his head together. I mean, there were, you know, even Helmut Marko was saying things about Max being a little bit impatient, but he, I mean, give the guy credit. He went away from that as a young guy that's still obviously maturing as a person, despite being in Formula One. I mean, come on. Let's be honest, guys. I think back to what you were like when you're 21, and then imagine you're racing in Formula One. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of responsibility. So, I mean, Max, very much, we've basically watched him grow up before our eyes, and we're still watching him do that. So, I mean, the point is, you take a guy, a young guy like that, in that situation where you've got all this talent, you've got all this opportunity in front of you, but, you know, things aren't going quite right. But, I mean, like I say, credit to the guy. He went away from Monaco. He had a pretty decent race. I mean, he managed to make up a number of positions during the race, about the only person that did so. Anyways, he goes away from that, comes to Montreal a couple of weeks later, no entourage, not even his dad, Yoss, who's obviously also a former Formula One driver. And he goes there, quietly has a very, very good weekend, and from there hasn't looked back since. And, you know, he's been able to get a couple of wins every now and again. The two that really stand out for me was Austria last weekend, and or 2 weekends ago, I should say, and very much reminded me of a Nigel Mansell type performance from way back in the day, the way that he just charged through the field and went on to win that race. And the other one that stands out as well was the Mexican Grand Prix last year when Red Bull, obviously, over the past couple of years, have never really been favorites to win any races, and usually they've done so just through their reacting on the track. Like I was saying just now, China was an excellent example of that. And but when they got to Mexico, the Renault engine that they had last year just really performed better than all the rest in the thinner air and in the higher altitude of Mexico City. So those are two that really stand out for me. But the thing is, I mean, Lewis Hamilton, still the best driver, still in the best car, and he's still in the best team. And that combo, I mean, you know, you're ticking three boxes there. The best guy, best car, best team. But I mean, Max is doing some impressive things with less. I mean, Red Bull don't have the budget that Mercedes do. I believe that Ferrari spent something, and I can never remember if it's dollars or pounds. Anyways, I think it is dollars. So I think that Ferrari spent something in the neighborhood of about $420-440 million this year. Mercedes about 400, and then I believe that Red Bull's budget this year was about 200 million or somewhere in that neighborhood, a little bit more than that perhaps. Anyways, so I mean, they are one of the top teams. The fact of the matter is, they're not Mercedes. But out of the 10 teams in Formula One, there is only one Mercedes. And Max, I think, even though he is at Red Bull, has done some very impressive things. So, you know, where's it going to go from there? We will wait and see. I mean, the Honda engine is looking very good. They certainly seem to be getting better and better all the time. And the one thing that Christian Horner is actually looking towards to now is Max Verstappen's future. And he says that contract clauses won't decide what Max's future at Red Bull is. And he says that he believes that because he says that Max is genuinely believing in the team's project with Honda. And Max's contract runs to the end of 2020, but who knows? I mean, obviously, if he's out of contract, which other team in Formula One wouldn't want him as one of their drivers? Obviously, I think besides Red Bull, there would be only two other logical choices for him to go to in terms of teams. Obviously, one of them is Scarlet Red, one of them is Silver, and obviously that's Ferrari and Mercedes. But but Horner really figures that because of the work that Red Bull are doing with Honda, and the fact that that Max is fully buying into that, that they are going to keep him there. And he says that there's an awful lot of speculation about Max's contract and what's going to happen after that. And he says that, or he has confirmed that there are some performance clauses, but that's standard practice for all the leading teams. And Christian says, and a quote said, there are performance criteria in all the top drivers' contracts, which are probably mirrored in both Ferrari and Mercedes drivers' contracts as well. The win in Austin Austria doesn't change anything as far as we're concerned. And beyond contracts, if you're holding a driver just because of a piece of paper, that isn't the right relationship to have. Max genuinely believes in the project we have and the skill set we have as a team and the Honda progress and development. And he very much buys into that, irrelevant of any piece of paper. He enjoys being in the team and he believes in its potential. And certainly, I think there is a lot to that comment by Christian Horner, because that was going to be the big question, right? Coming into this year, going with the Honda engines after all these years with Renault and all the races and all the championships that they won, both drivers and constructors, it really was almost uncharted territory. But they did have the benefit of running Honda engines in their junior team in Toro Rosso for one season. So it was a try before you buy scenario for Red Bull. So there really was nothing to lose. They had the Renault engines at the back of their own cars. They've got the Honda engine the back of their sister team in Toro Rosso. So they're getting the telemetry, they're getting the feedback. And so they were able to make a wise and informed decision. And once they decided to go with Honda and decided to make that break, that Honda came out and said that their benchmark was to make sure that Red Bull was going to be no worse off than where they were with Renault. So maybe that sounds like a little bit of a low bar to set, but I don't really think so. I mean, you look at where Honda has come from and where they've gotten to over the past couple of years, and we don't need to go into the whole McLaren-Honda dumpster fire. I mean, that's been discussed pretty much ad nauseum even on this podcast. But the point is that they are basically at that level that they were with the Renault engines, perhaps slightly ahead. I mean, they were, you know, nicking race wins here and there with Renault Power last year. So, I mean, they only have the one win this year, but hey, they're the only team other than Ferrari to win one race or win a race this year out of the first nine races. So that's something in itself. And the fact that they're, you know, they don't have as many points in the Constructors Championship this year is, like I said earlier, it's more to do to the fact that they don't have two consistent drivers that are scoring consistent or scoring points on a consistent basis. In past years, you had Max Verstappen and Danny Ricciardo at Red Bull, and that's a pretty strong and solid lineup of drivers. And Pierre Gasly, for whatever reason, he's still growing into it, still not delivering quite where he needs to be, and who knows how that's going to end at Red Bull. Obviously, that's not really a destination for drivers to come and try and develop. I mean, they're expected to be contenders or at least maybe not contenders for, well, I guess, yeah, let's be fair. They are going to be contenders for race wins. They're expected to perform highly. And if it doesn't work out, then there is a record. You will get cut from the team. Just ask Danny Kvyat. He went from Toro Rosso into Red Bull and then back to Toro Rosso in somewhat a bit of a disgrace. And then that it was at his expense that Max got his kick at the can at Toro Rosso. And certainly he hasn't looked back. So there is a little bit more to talk about. And I'll do that after I take this final break here on the show this week on Scuderia F1, and we'll be back in just one moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. Time to start closing it down now as we head into the final segment, and we're just going to stick with the Honda and the Red Bull theme just for the moment here. And the final bit of news of that is Honda are targeting faster qualifying modes as their next step in their engine upgrade program this season, and they're targeting this improved qualifying mode following their first victory back in Formula One. A couple of weeks ago in Austria, and that was their first win in 13 years, which is still a bit of a mind blower. But certainly the development that Honda is making in Formula One, it's tangible now, it's noticeable. They have a lot of power, they got a lot of reliability. Who knows? Maybe somewhere secretly at McLaren, they're feeling, maybe they're wondering if they should have stuck with him. But hey, let's be fair to McLaren. Now that they've had Renault for the second season, they are doing pretty good. Like I was saying earlier, they're fourth in the World Championship, in the Constructors' Championship, I should say, at the moment. And they're looking quite pacey, looking pretty good. So slowly but surely, things are working out for McLaren. And hey, that was a handy segue, because now we're just going to talk about about how the budget cap is the only way for McLaren to fight their way into the top three again. And that comes from the mouth of McLaren team principal Andreas Seidel. And he says that the incoming budget cap is the only way that McLaren can fight with the Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull again. And, well, they need something, right? I mean, they have not won a race since 2012. And that's a long, long time. And they haven't had a championship success since 2008, which is when Hamilton won his first world championship. So it's been a very, very long time since they've tasted success. And he said that, or Seidel, that is, says that they know as a team that they underachieve with the possibilities that they have, the infrastructure, budget, the know-how, all those things. He said they should be better with what they have. But, you know, that just hasn't been the case. His goal, Seidel's goal, that is to, what he says, to unleash the potential of the team with the circumstances that they have. And, like everyone else, he's looking towards what the 2021 regulations are going to bring, and he's hoping that's going to go what he calls in the right direction. But he says the one thing that is clear, if they want to be competitive in the future and fight with the others, they need that level playing field. And he believes that the budget cap is the only way that they're ever going to be able to compete with the other three big team. So it certainly is an interesting admission from a guy that's head of a team, a big team. And obviously, like I said, it has been a very, very long time since they've tasted success. But that just goes to show you, once you fall off of the top in Formula One, how difficult it is to get back into a competitive position. I mean, McLaren is just one case study. Williams is a completely different one. So it is interesting that to hear that admission from one of the bigwigs at McLaren that really they need that help and a level playing field financially to get back into position to really be competitive. And another thing, I have to admit that I like what I'm hearing from Andreas Seidel. Obviously, he's just new in the job. I mean, he came there from the Porsche LMP1 project, and he's only been there at McLaren for a couple of months. And he pushed for a new wind tunnel basically from day one. And that was announced basically 2 months after he officially took control or took up his position as a team principal. And basically the agreement that he has with CEO Zach Brown and the owners of McLaren is to identify and correct weaknesses or his perceived weaknesses in the team as soon as possible. And he goes on to say that he wants the team to embrace a more risky approach to car development in a bid to move further up the grid. And he says that the most important thing is to see continuous development and continuous improvement for the team. And it's important for them to take time to go into details in terms of methods and tools that they're using to develop the car and to develop the technology, because it's the foundation for what he calls an aggressive development that is required to overcome the deficit and the gap that they have, big teams in front of them. And also in other McLaren news, they've confirmed that they're going to retain Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris for 2020, which I think is a really good move for them. I sometimes think that it was a bit of a bold move by them to go with Sainz and Norris for this year. I mean, Sainz had never really been, obviously, with a big team in Formula One before. He was at Toro Rosso and then at Renault last year. Lando Norris, although touted as a very, very, very talented youngster with the potential to take that into Formula One, has impressed. I mean, he's been getting better and better all season long. And at the French Grand Prix several weeks ago, he really did well to overcome some mechanical issues late in the race. And that was a fine piece of driving. So a good move, in my opinion, to keep them for 2020. So there's still a number of things to get through until the end of the show here. I don't think we're going to get through all of them, but that's okay. There's all I'd rather have too many things to talk about in the time that we have than not enough. But we'll get through what we can. And Robert Kubica, the Williams driver, says that the struggles that the team has had this year cast what he calls a shadow on his F1 return achievement, and that is how, well, he says he thinks that it's sometimes been forgotten how big of an achievement achievement it was for him to return to Formula One. And of course, Kubica was a Formula One driver, over a decade ago, but his career was cut short back in 2011 when he had a crash while driving a rally car that led to the partial amputation of his forearm. So he did get an opportunity to test with Williams and Renault, and then he was the reserve driver with Williams last year, and that became a race drive for this year. And he went on to say that he didn't regret what he decided, and he says that frustration is not a correct word, because he says that he believes that in the end it's better being in Formula One rather than sitting at home at the sofa and watching it Formula One on television. He said that he would be happier if he was higher up in the racing order and having less problems, but he says in the past few months the difficult situations put a lot of shadow on what he has achieved, and the big achievement it is for him to get back there. And then he goes on to say that sometimes you forget, because Formula One is such a fast sport and everything that happens very fast, you forget in the end the achievement that he was working on for a number of years. And that is true. I mean, from that point of view, it is a very impressive accomplishment for him. But the car that they have, the FW42, it's a couple of seconds off of the pace. But it is interesting, despite the fact that they've been at the bottom of Formula One for the past couple of years, Williams, that is, that they believe that the foundation for this year's car, the FW42, is a good base for the car going into next year, and even despite the poor form that they've had on track this year. So they've really been behind the eight ball basically right from the very get-go. They showed up late to winter testing in Spain, and the biggest problem that they've had is a lack of downforce. But their senior race engineer Dave Robson said that there's no fundamental problems with the car design, and they really lack development relative to their opposition. So it is encouraging on one hand and discouraging on the other. I mean, it is encouraging that somebody with the technical know-how and understanding of the car believes that the foundation of the car and the basics of the car are very good, and that there is potential to take what they have in the car from this year and take it forward into next year. And hopefully they can do something with it, whether or not they can move that forward and get a better car for next year. That really remains to be seen. I mean, they are way off pace compared to everyone else, and that is even with a Mercedes engine in the back. So certainly I hope that it does work out for them, and at least they can take maybe a little bit of heart, a little bit of motivation that McLaren, that even though they never really hit quite rock bottom like Williams have, they've come awfully close in the past couple of years. But 2019 has been a revelation for McLaren this year, and I for one am glad to see them pulling their way back up through the grid and being the best of the rest, currently fourth in world championship. I think even though it sounds like celebrating mediocrity, it isn't really, because they've come a long way in a relatively short amount of time, and I love to see McLaren keep pulling it forward and improving, and like to see Williams do exactly the same thing. Now, just talking about a couple of other things here quickly before we close it down. Lance Stroll admits that the Q1 exits are what he calls, quote, a pain in the arse, and that's going back quite a long time, because he has not made it out of Q1 so far this year, and his early qualifying exits go back as far as last year, and that's now 13 consecutive races that he's not been able to make it out of Q1. And Stroll says, quote, I know in the back of my mind it's just a process, and right now it's a bit of a pain in the arse on a Saturday. I don't take the last year into account, because that's where the car was on Saturdays, but this year moving forward, I see a very exciting season ahead, and I know our Sundays are really strong. And ultimately, if I could sign up on Sundays for points rather than doing well on Saturdays, I would. We've proven that we can do well in races, but it's still an area we can build on, and we just have to keep working on it. And he goes on to saying that it's just tiny things that keep him from getting out of Q1. And he says, I know that on many occasions we could have been in Q2, but shit happens. Well, you know what? That's fair enough. I mean, you can make the case for traffic and different things like that, but 13 races in a row, bro, it's not always traffic. just admit it. You're not good at qualifying. You've had some good races, but 13 races in a row, not getting out of Q1. I think that's more on you than traffic or wind or sun getting in your eyes. So yeah, take that one with a bit of a pinch of salt. And this one I had to kind of shake my head at a little bit here, and that's Rich Energy. They were the title sponsor for Haas F1. They announced earlier today via Twitter, which is very contemporary and forward-thinking of them, that they've decided to terminate their sponsorship deal with Haas F1, citing poor performance. So their tweet reads as follows: "Today, Rich Energy terminated our contract with Haas F1 for poor performance. We aim to beat Red Bull Racing, and being behind Williams Racing in Austria is unacceptable. The politics and PC attitude in F1 is also inhibiting our business. We wish the team well. Hashtag F1, hashtag Rich Energy." So this is from a company that that came out and said that they wanted to be better than Red Bull, both on the track and off the track, and have decided to pull the plug on their sponsorship deal in the not even half a season in Formula One, so a bit bizarre. And they were also in legal trouble because of the logo that they had, this sort of stylized stag's head or whatever it was, basically infringed upon the logo of a bicycle company. So they've had their issues, and Haas has not made a comment as of yet, but Gunther Steiner has hinted that there might be coming at some point, so they will comment on it. And finally, I don't even know where to file or where to put this, but there was an article on ESPN.co.uk in their Formula One section, and that came from the lips of Bernie Ecclestone, former head honcho of Formula One, where he says, "I would take a bullet for Vladimir Putin," who is the Russian president. And this was in a rambling and bizarre interview in the Times newspaper in the UK. And Ecclestone went on to say, and I quote, "If someone had a machine gun and was prepared to shoot Putin, I would stand in front of him because he's a good guy. He's never done anything that isn't doing good things for people." So I don't know. I can't really speak to about what Vladimir Putin does or doesn't do, but certainly that is just one of those unexpected kind of bizarre comments. But maybe Bernie knows Vladimir Putin and maybe he has good reason to say what he say. But honestly, Bernie, I don't know what to do with that. That was just one of those weird kind of quotes that popped up, and I'm just going to leave it there for you guys to decide what to do with it. Anyways, guys, that is a wrap. Going to leave it right there. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to get in touch, best way is to do so via the email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com or on Twitter at scuderiaf1pod. Read all the tweets, read all the emails. And we love hearing from you guys. Love getting in touch with all of you and talking F1. And that's it. That's a wrap. Enjoy the British Grand Prix. We'll be back again this time next week. And until then, have a great weekend. Enjoy the race. And we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to scuderiaf1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com.